We look into the mirror and see an ugly rash spreading across our skin. What to do? Well, what we do is spend about $1 billion a year on skincare products. But all that money leads us to ask, can what we see happening on the outside be a reflection of what is going on inside?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1179th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Perth who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, Senators Dianne Feinstein and Susan Collins have introduced the Personal Care Products Safety Act to, they say, protect consumers' health, create uniform safety rules, strengthen the Food and Drug Administration, and regulate the ingredients to put that are put into personal care products. I got to thinking about all the money being spent on personal care products, which is like $1 billion a year or so. Then I got to wondering what will happen when all that money meets all the new laws and rules and regulations being put forth to make those skincare products safe. Then I got to thinking, time for pharmacist Ben Fuchs. Pharmacist Ben is a compounding pharmacist, which means he can grab a bunch of chemicals from the shelves of a pharmacy and mix up a medicine to suit what ails you. But mostly he doesn't. What he mostly does is give advice on how to take care of yourself on the Bright Side radio show right here on the GCN Radio Network. Let me explain. When my daughter suffered a rash on her skin that found its way onto her face, the poor girl was terrified and could easily have talked mom and dad out of big bucks for some kind of potion to fix the problem. But instead, we had her call pharmacist Ben Fuchs for advice. What he told her went something like this. What is happening to your skin is likely a response to something that is happening in your digestive tract. Start a diary of everything you eat. In a very short time, the diary will tell you what's wrong. Sure enough, the diary revealed that our daughter was allergic to dairy products. No more dairy, no more problem. And so, when I think of all the dollars being spent on skincare products and all of the new laws and rules and regulations being developed to make those skincare products safe, I think it's time to turn to pharmacist Ben Fuchs and ask, can what we see happening on the outside be a reflection of what is going on inside? Pharmacist Ben, welcome back to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. It's an honor to be on your very well done and entertaining radio show.
Well, thank you so much. Last time you were aboard, number 911, we had a chat with Nancy Chapman of the Soy Foods Manufacturing Association, and we had a little give and take over soy foods.
That was a long time ago.
Long time ago.
Speaking of the skin, soy is one of the biggest skin problem, skin foods. Or skin ingredients, skin component, skin anti-skin food components that you can possibly ingest.
So you haven't really changed your mind on that at
well,
all.
Well, you know, soy's got some. Here's the thing about nutrition, Michael. It's very confusing to people. Sometimes a food will have good stuff in it, but that doesn't make it a good food. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Sometimes a food will have, for example, let's just take for oats, for example. Oats are a wonderful source of good fats. Phytonutrients, vitamin E, there's lots of wonderful fiber, as I say, in oats and beta-glucan, and there's lots of really good stuff in oats. But as a general food, oats are not a good food because a lot of people react to them, to oats. Oats contain gluten and can gum up the works in the intestine, and they can also be problematic for the skin as well. So a lot of times you'll hear people who represent food interests talking about the wonderful things that are in foods, but they don't distinguish the things that are in the foods from the food quality as a whole. And that's the problem with soy. Soy does have wonderful protein in it. In fact, it's one of nature's best sources of plant protein. It's got gross substances and a lot of elements that aren't found in other grains or seeds, of good oils and good fats and such. But as a whole, many people react to soy because it contains anti-nutrients and it contains chemicals that wreak havoc on the digestive tracts and the immune systems of the animals, including the human animals, that eat it. So you got to distinguish from the individual components in a food. You got to distinguish the individual components from the entire food as a whole. And that was my beef with, no pun intended.
Well, they're good. You know, already you're not sounding like a compounding pharmacist
all. I'm not. I'm a chemist. Here's the thing, Michael. This is a very important distinction that a lot of people miss. There's clinical chemistry and there's biochemistry. Have you ever heard of this distinction before? It's very important.
From you.
Okay. Well, clinical chemistry is the chemistry of the clinic, meaning diagnostics, meaning symptoms. Meaning, how can you manipulate the body's symptomology to keep it quiet and have your patient stay on your medication for a long period of time without changing the fundamental dysfunction that's causing the symptoms in the first place? That's biochemistry. Biochemistry is the pathways. It's how A gets turned into B, gets turned into C, gets turned into D. This is what's happening in our body all the time. A, shape A, because a chemical is nothing but a shape. Shape A is getting turned to shape B, is getting turned to shape C, D, E, F, G, all the way on down the line, ad infinitum, forever and ever and ever, as long as that organism is alive. That's biochemistry. And when you're sick, Michael, it's not a clinical chemistry problem. It's a biochemistry problem. And pharmacy and medicine are about clinical chemistry. They're not about biochemistry. Well, they address the clinic. They address the diagnostics. They address the tests. They address the symptoms. They address the measurements. They address the map. They do not address the territory. They don't address the fundamental biochemical breakdown that is the cause of the symptoms and the diagnostics. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No problem. It sounds to me like someplace along the line to you becoming a compounding pharmacist, you were sitting down under an apple tree and an apple fell on your head.
No.
And it changed the way you...
Kind of like that. But what it was my first day of biochemistry. My first day of biochemistry, I was... had an epiphany, a spiritual experience. I understood that the body as a whole is made up of endless parallel series of biochemical reactions that are constantly occurring. And every sight we see, every feeling we feel, every thought we think, every toe we wiggle, everything that happens in our body is the end result of this incredible, unbelievable, awe-inspiring, endless process, biochemical processes that it's a miracle that they happen so exquisitely perfectly that it's inevitable that they'll eventually break down or eventually something will happen to them. And that's where sickness is. That's where disease is. I became very spiritual when I understood the biochemical nature of the body. And it was like sitting under a tree and having an apple hit you on the head. It was an epiphany. And then the more I studied pharmacy, the more I studied medicine, the more I realized we're not addressing that. We're compelling the body to behave itself in a way that we see fit based on measurements and diagnostics. And nobody questions that the way a fish doesn't question water. This concept of clinical chemistry and diagnostics and pharmaceuticals and the pharmacomedical model is so embedded in our culture that nobody thinks to question it. Yet, its failure is hidden in plain sight, Michael. We have more diagnostics and more doctors and more pharmacies and more drugs and more more pharmaceutical intervention than any culture in the history of mankind. And we are simultaneously the most obese, the most cancer-ridden, the most diabetic, the most autoimmune. We have the most autoimmune patients. We're the sickest culture ever in the history of mankind as we are simultaneously the most doctored. And by that, I'm including pharmacy. And so clearly we have a problem, right?
Yeah.
And so to me, it's self-evident that we have to start to addressing, if we're going to be serious about health, we have to start addressing, we have to start focusing somewhere else. I say biochemistry number one, but you know what, Michael? I'm a spiritual person, and the more I work with patients, and I've been working with patients now for 35 years, the more I realize and the more I see that disease is a spiritual crisis, a mental crisis, an emotional issue, as well as it is a physical, and that's why I'm always talking about the multi-dimensions of healing and the multi-dimensions of health, the spiritual, the mental, the emotional, the physical. And as a healthcare professional, Michael, I can't in good conscience say take this drug. You know, that's why I got fired from Kmart many, many years ago and never went to work in a pharmacy again, is because I was telling people not to take their drugs. And I know that's heresy. I understand there's probably people out there who are thinking that I'm crazy and that I'm dangerous. But the fact of the matter is you're not going to get better with a prescription drug, although antibiotics and pain pills and occasionally being maintained until you can fix a problem, sometimes that's necessary. I'm not Pollyannish about it. I understand the need. And I always say everybody should have pain pills in their medicine cabinet. Everybody.
So, we have just a couple seconds before the break, but I got to ask, what was the apple?
When I first understood the biochemical nature of our biology. I saw the serotonin production pathway is actually specifically what it was. And if you want to get into detail about it, but it was when I saw the pathways. You know, I saw that the body is constantly turning what we call chemicals, but you're nothing but really shapes. Do you ever wonder what a chemical is, by the way? Or what a molecule is? Nobody really understands that.
Well, wait a minute. Let's pick it up after the break, because it is time for a break with pharmacist Ben and you right back.
And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, we were talking about chemicals and what exactly is a chemical. Pharmacist Ben has an idea. Ben?
Yeah, so a chemical is made up of molecules, and molecules, if you remember your high school biology or high school chemistry, you remember those shapes with the letters, and you have like C and a dash and a C and a dash and another dash and an H, and does that ring a bell, that kind of imagery, right? So when we see that, we think of it projects the idea of a static substance. A static, something that's solid, that's real, but it's not.
But it's not.
It's electromagnetic. It's magnets. It's electronic waves. Each one of those letters, the C and the H and the O and the N, whatever it happens to be, is really an electromagnetic wave, and these electromagnetic waves resonate with each other. The electromagnetic wave of a C resonates with the electromagnetic wave of an H, and they draw a line there, but it's really electromagnetics. And these electromagnetic substances, or electromagnetic entities...
You know what it sounds like?
Yeah.
Everything's in love.
It is love. Chemistry's love. When two people are talking, what do we say? They have chemistry. Chemistry is how things go together, Michael. That's all it is. Cooking is chemistry. People talking to each other is chemistry. There's chemistry in the body. There's chemistry. Wherever you see chemistry, you have two things in love. That's a perfect way of saying it.
Wow.
Two things that are resonating together. And it is love. Chemistry is the science of how things go together, which you can easily call love. And so the point I'm making is that the body is constantly tweaking these shapes, these electromagnetic frequency shapes, and it's constantly changing these things in a way, Michael, that is incomprehensible. Its scope is incomprehensible. Its vastness, its intricacy, its web-like nature, where one thing affects another, affects another, affects another. You know the story, the Hindu story of Indra's web, where you touch one side of it and the entire web shakes. And that's the way the biochemical milieu of the body is. And so we have to respect that, Michael. We have to get out of the way. And the only thing that should ever interface with this chemistry is food, and food that the body recognizes. And that's the only thing that should ever get into the bloodstream through the digestive tract, is food that the body recognizes. Now, today, most of us, as you know good and well, better than anybody, most of us subsist largely, and by large, I mean 80 to 90% of our calories, come from food that is not recognized, that the body doesn't know anything about, that was only, didn't exist. You know, most of the food we eat didn't exist 200 years ago or 250 years ago, even the produce. Really, the produce today is not the same produce that we got 250 years ago. So our human body has been forced over the last 250 years, gradually, and then at an accelerated pace over the last few decades, to put substances inside of it that it has no idea what to do with, for the most part.
Stranger.
It's completely foreign to the body. And this is what's accounting for our, in large part, for our horrible health situation. And so what do? Instead of trying to work at it at the level of the food, we cover it up by trying to manipulate and compel the body to do our bidding with toxic poison pharmaceuticals. And when I say poison, I'm not being poetic. I'm not being rhetorical. I'm being literal, because the body's poison control system, located in the liver, that utilizes enzymes and minerals and vitamins to clean out poisons, is mobilized every time you take a prescription drug. So much so that when you dose yourself on a prescription drug, the dose has to be 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 times higher than the dose that's really needed to account for the liver's purification, for the liver's detoxification of that substance. They have to adjust the drug. They call it the first pass effect, which is the effect that the liver has on a drug to detoxify the detoxify it. So they have to raise the dose of the drug. And what's even worse is sometimes the nutrients that the body is using to detoxify the drug are the very nutrients that are in short supply that caused you to need the drug in the first place. And they don't show up as side effects. So, for example, glutathione is an enzyme that the liver produces to detoxify itself. It's made up of glutamine. It's amino acids glutamine and glycine and cysteine. It requires sulfur. It requires selenium. It requires the B complex. And every prescription drug you take costs you all of those nutrients, many of which are important for the heart and the brain and the immune system and the skin, that you're taking the drug in the first place for. So we have this cockamamie, ridiculous pharmacomedical model that nobody questions the way a fish doesn't question water because it is so embedded in our culture. And the only way to address the situation is to freak people out and to wake them up by saying things like, your drugs are poison, literally, not metaphorically. And I'm telling you, Michael, I'm like you. I like history, right? And I'm fascinated with the Middle Ages. And I was reading this book on the Middle Ages about the bubonic plague, and they had this, I forgot the name of the book, but they had this really cool description about how they used to, you're going to love this, they didn't have indoor plumbing, and they didn't know about feces and how toxic waste human excrement was. And so they would actually dump it out their window. They collect it in a pail, and they dump their human excrement out the window, and would pile up on the sidewalks and on the front lawns and in front of their houses, and they didn't think anything of it. And I was reading it, and I was thinking to myself, what the heck were those people thinking? How could they be so stupid? And then I remembered that we take 500,000 gallbladders out of Americans every year when their gallbladder has a problem, or we take out 500,000 thyroids out of people every year when their thyroids have a problem, or we medicate millions and millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people every year when they have high blood pressure or when they have blood sugar problems. I mean, we're just as stupid as they are. And in 150 years, they're going to look back at our pharmacomedical model, and they're going to say, just like I was saying about those people in the Middle Ages, they're going to say, what the heck were they thinking?
Well, you know, you talked about poisons that are in our food, but what about the poisons in our skincare products
that
slather on top of our skin?
It's a very good point, Michael. I've been in skin. You know, that's my main business is the skincare business, and the skin is my main
You called skin our biggest organ.
It's the largest organ of the body, absolutely. And our understanding of the skin has grown by leaps and bounds in the last three or four decades. Yet the products we use and the strategies we use on our skin have not changed in 150 years. If you go to the dermatologist today, Michael, if you have acne, excuse me, or your kid has acne, you're going to get the same darn medicine you would have gotten in 1959. And 1960, it hasn't changed. The tools of the dermatological profession are the exact same tools that they used 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 70 years ago. You get steroids, you get antibiotics. These days they have some deluxe biologics that shut down the immune system, but for the most part, you're going to get a steroid and you're going to get an antibiotic. Our understandings of the skin from a scientific perspective and a research perspective and a histological perspective and a cellular perspective have not made it into the world of clinical chemistry. This is the same distinction we were talking about earlier. The distinction between the chemistry and the biology of the clinic versus the chemistry and the biology of the body. And these are two separate ideas. Now, the skin is not only the body's largest organ, Michael, but it's a very large, the second largest, immune organ. So that the immune system the skin is a protective, defensive organ. And sensitive skin, and rashy skin, and eczematous skin, and psoriatic skin. These are all signs of a defensive response, Michael. Now, I'm going to ask you a question as a layperson, okay?
Sure.
If you have a problem that's associated with a defensive response and you want to end it, what do you want to look for?
The attacker.
Exactly. Michael, you're a doctor. You're smarter than a doctor. because the medical response is to shut down the defensive response. Now, I'm saying, like you were talking about...
Which would be the equivalent of slathering stuff on your face because you have a rash or something.
That's exactly what slathering stuff on your face if you have a rash is. It's a cortisone cream. It's an immune suppressant. Cortisone is an immune suppressant. It shuts down the immune system. The drug versions are dexamethasone and betamethasone and various steroid-like creams, triamcinolone. But for the most part, most people go to the drugstore and get cortisone, shuts down the immune system. What I told your daughter was let's figure out what's getting into the body. Now, keep in mind, Michael, this link between the digestive system and the body is something that I sometimes feel like people say, oh, that Ben, he's always talking about the digestive system and oh, it's always that food.
Before you launch into this particular segment, which is a very, very important, we have to take a quick break.
Great.
Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour, with my friend, pharmacist Ben Fuchs. Pharmacist Ben, right back with a digestive track, and you.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, folks, when the daughter came down with a rash on her skin that spread to her face, big panic in the Olson household. But instead of running down and buying some drugs, we had nowhere to go. Had not the slightest idea what to get. We called pharmacist Ben Fuchs. And he suggested, no, don't get anything and spread it on your face. Get a diary and keep track of what you're eating. Pharmacist Ben, how does what you're eating affect your skin?
Isn't that great? You know, think about it, Michael. You got that wonderful, beautiful body of yours that you look at in the mirror. You get out of the shower. Next time you get out of the shower, I want you to look in the mirror in all your bodily glory and look at it. And think about how that body got made. What is it that made that body? Well, guess what, Michael? Yesterday's lunch becomes your body. Your arm, the hamburger you ate yesterday becomes your arm today. How does that happen, Michael? Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Come on. To me, that's the most awesome, miraculous biological process, how our food becomes us.
And then when you really look down, way down there in the gut, it gets even more amazing.
Oh, what's going on inside the gut? You don't want to know what's going on in your gut after you eat a hamburger. You don't want to see that. That is not a pretty sight.
But that is you being made.
It's you being made. Except for most of us, 99.9% of the stuff we're eating gets excreted out because the body can't use it. So ultimately what ends up not on our skin, but as our skin or as our arm or as our fingers or as our toes or as our eyes or as our ears is what we ate. So how can it not be a result of what we ate? How can our bodily biochemistry not be a result of what we eat? How can anything that happens in our body not be the result of what we eat? Can you help me with that, Michael? Is there any way that it could not be the result of what we eat?
Perhaps if we become robots, maybe with plastic.
Maybe if we become cyborgs, yeah. Then what we are will be made up of something that's industrially produced in a factory somewhere.
Why do we miss that fact?
We're oblivious.
We're like those people in the Middle Ages throwing fecal matter out the window.
Yes, exactly. And it's not, you know, it's the dumbed down nature of our culture. We're dumbed down. We don't learn science. We don't learn how to think critically. That's the biggest problem, Michael, is we have an education system that comes from the industrial age when we needed humans to be widgets to work in the factory. We didn't need them to make good decisions. We needed them to do what they were told. But today, this educational system, which is that we have today, is a vestige of that time when we needed to create workers. Right now, we don't need workers anymore. We need thinkers. We need people who understand logic. We need people who are open-minded. We need people who can burst through dogma. And that's what it takes. We have to awaken to the nature of the universe and our ability to process it, even if it's a little bit complex. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, hopefully the education of the future will do that. I don't know if this generation, our generation, if it's too late or not. I'm trying to wake up as many people as possible. But, I mean, everything I've said so far today, in the last 45 minutes or so, hasn't it been common sense?
Yes.
It's not really difficult to understand. And so the proof of the pudding is in the eating. I talk about the digestive system and its relationship to the skin. It seems self-evident to me. I shouldn't have to prove it. But nonetheless, we've been so dumbed down that we have to see it to believe it. Guess what? If you have a skin condition and you fast, guess what's going to happen to your skin condition for the most part? It's going to get better. You know what else, Michael? If you have an autoimmune disease and you fast, for the most part, your symptoms are going to resolve themselves. For the most part. You may have some residual,
but
for the most part.
How does that work, though, that when you're fasting, you're not eating?
Because you're not introducing toxicity into the body.
Oh, so we're looking for what that toxicity is, then.
That's how where the food diary comes from. You fast for a couple of days, and then you eat one food at a time. Or you eat as simply as you can. So instead of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, you just have peanuts. Or instead of a chicken salad sandwich, you just have chicken. Or instead of spaghetti and meatballs, you just have some pasta. You know, so you try to eat as simply as you can to isolate the problem foods. You start with your favorite foods because that's usually where the problem is. And for the most part, you're going to notice things that you didn't notice before. The 3 or 4 days or 2 days or 1 day that you took off from food will sensitize your body to where you notice things that went under the radar before. You know, if you have gas every time you eat dried fruit, for example, you're not going to know it if you do it every day. You're just not even going to remember that you have gas and you're bloated and you feel uncomfortable in your digestive system every time you have dried apricots. But if you stop eating dried apricots for 2 days and then have them, or you fast for 2 days and then have some dried apricots, you're going to notice it. In fact, haven't you ever laid off a sugar for a couple of days and then you eat it again and it's like super sweet, right?
Yeah.
It's like you can't understand how you could eat it before because it's so sweet. When you resensitize your body during the time off, you will become more cognizant of things that slipped under the radar.
So
sensations.
Fasting is hugely important.
Hugely important. It's one of the best things a human being can do. And if not fasting, calorie restriction. You know the ketogenic diet, right? That's all the rage these days.
Right.
Well, we learned about the ketogenic diet in pharmacy school because it's a medical protocol. The ketogenic diet is a medical protocol for seizures. What they noticed at the turn of the century, they started studying seizures, and they noticed when people fasted, their seizures went away. And so they realized that there was something about fasting that helped the brain. But people couldn't fast, so they tried to come up with a diet that duplicated a fasting diet, duplicated the chemistry of a fasting diet, and that's how they came up with the ketogenic diet. It's a fasting diet. When you fast, Michael, your body mobilizes feel-good chemicals. It mobilizes alert chemicals. It mobilizes growth chemicals. Why does it do that, do you think? Why would fasting force this beautifully 3.5 billion year old system that started with cells and became the human body, which has evolved to be unbelievably perfect to be able to handle any situation the planet Earth can give it, not any, but a lot of situations the planet Earth can give it, why would it respond to lack of food or lack of calories with feel-good chemicals, with growth chemicals, with chemicals that make your senses of smell and eyesight more acute? Why do you suppose?
Well, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
Does it? It because now you can go forage, and now you have the energy to hunt, and now you can spot the wild game more clearly, or smell the wild game more clearly. You become better able, better equipped to deal with the world. The opposite of this,
because you're hungry.
What's that?
Because
yes.
You're hungry.
You're hungry. That's what it means to be hungry. You want your kid to be hungry, so he goes out and gets something done. What's the opposite of hunger? What's the opposite of this lack of calories? You know what we call it, Michael? Domestication. It's the difference between a lion and a pussycat. And we've been made to be pussycats through empires of food. Have you ever read that book, Empires of Food?
I haven't, but I should.
Oh, absolutely you should. It talks about how grains were created as a way to create empires.
Yes.
As a way
okay,
to...
gotcha. I'm tuned in totally. So
okay.
Without grains, you know, we would not have civilization.
We wouldn't have empires.
That's
the
right.
We wouldn't have kings. We wouldn't have political systems. We wouldn't have armies. We wouldn't have hierarchies. We wouldn't have rich and poor. We wouldn't have money. We wouldn't have any of the trappings of civilization because we would be hunter-gatherers and we couldn't stay in one place.
Oh, right? Boy, I love it. Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with pharmacist Ben Fuchs, who is a compounding pharmacist, but mostly what he compounds is knowledge. And when we come back, what can we do to make our skin better?
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, as long as we're talking about empires of grain, I have something to pass by you that I wondered about. I was raised up in the plains of Montana and close to the Crow Indian tribe, and happened to notice that they have a pretty tough time with alcohol in general. And I got to thinking about it, and I started thinking about grain. And of course, how we built those empires of grain that we built is by fermenting grains.
That was a big part of it, absolutely, getting people intoxicated, because then they could work, then they wouldn't mind working and digging ditches for irrigation.
So we lived, those of us who came from that stock, lived with drinking alcohol for many thousands of years, whereas the Plains Indians, they didn't hang around in any one place long enough to harvest or grow grain and make booze.
Right.
So they had no genetic intelligence for how to cope with that. Just one of my pet theories.
Well, I should tell you this. I lived on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation right by the Crow in Montana.
Ah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? And I actually participated in what they call the Sundance.
Sundance, yeah.
And they were intoxicated in the Sundance. I remember that. Which was kind of tragic. They were drinking a lot of alcohol on that dry reservation.
Yeah.
In fact, they would drink hairspray, which was kind of astounding to me. Alcohol is a whole other story, but this whole idea of the grains, the empires of grains, where I was going was this idea of domestication. We are domesticated through our food and our surfeit of calories. Our excess of calories turns us into pussycats. And this is in the interest of a control. It's in the interest of a control system. That's why you see food commercials everywhere and food billboards everywhere. They're tapping into our drive for calories to ultimately dumb us down and weaken us. And whether it's intentional or not, you know, everybody can have their own opinions on whether it's done consciously or not. But the fact is, it's done. And we're domesticated through the excess of calories that we eat, particularly the excess of carbohydrates that we eat, which are the grains. But it's not just the grains, Michael. It wasn't the grains that really created the agricultural revolution. It was the discovery that you could crack the grains open and get access to that sugar inside. See, grains are seeds, right?
Right.
They're hard to get at. The nutrients in a seed is hard to get at because nature doesn't want you to eat its seeds. Nature wants to keep the seeds intact so it can grow. So it is not in nature's interest to have people eat the seeds. So the seeds had to be cracked open. But the problem is nature is so smart, it put poisons inside the seeds that would punish the intrepid or foolish animal that decided to eat those seeds. And that's the problem with the grains, is we get these concentrated anti-nutrients in addition to the pure sugar inside the seed.
Is that what gluten is?
That's what gluten is. Gluten is a punishment chemical, a punishment molecule that's designed to punish the animals that eat it with horrible digestive issues and, by the way, skin issues. And I'm telling you, if I had a nickel for every person I told to get off of gluten that cured themselves of acne without any drugs and any dermatologist, I'd be a rich man, because I've thousands and thousands
of
times.
You know what's interesting about you is you tell people not to do things. Don't put that stuff on your face.
Right.
Do a diary.
Right.
Don't eat that. It'll kill you.
As opposed to
selling them stuff.
Well, I don't. Yeah, the health world has gotten entrenched or enmeshed with the marketing world and the money world in a very unsavory way.
I've heard dermatologists make more money as doctors than
they
just
do.
About anybody.
They do, because they could see they could see 20 people in an hour. They could have different rooms. I had a dermatologist friend who did just that. He would schedule people at the same time so that he could see 10 people in one moment just by going room to room to room to room, because you're only writing the same prescription for everybody. You're giving them an antibiotic or a steroid. And every once in a while, you might have to do a freezing with some nitrogen or something. But for the most part, it's just looking at a rash and giving them a steroid and giving them a steroid cream. And if I was going to be a doctor, I mean, that would be the easiest doctoring to be as a dermatologist. Not that you could do anything. You know, dermatology is a funny science, because The rash or the pimple or the eczema or the skin condition, the hyperpigmentation, the wrinkles, whatever it is, that's the end, Michael. That's the excrement, if you will. That's the last stage of the disease process.
It is a reflection then.
It's the end of it.
Yeah.
It's the way the body's eliminating something, the rash or the pimple. It's the resolution phase. It's how the body resolves the condition. So that to try to treat the resolution phase is like you having a stomach problem and the doctor saying, go rub some cream on that turd in the toilet bowl and your stomach will get better from that. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like we're treating the end. We're treating the excrement. And this is what dermatology is unfortunately about. Now, I have a lot of good friends who are dermatologists, and I don't want to beat up on the profession of dermatology because they mean well. You know, it's not like they're evil people, but the science of it, the clinical nature of it is flawed. And this is why it's so important to take these things into our own hands and not abdicate our health authority, not abdicate our authority over our own bodies to a health authority, to a health professional. When it comes to the skin, Michael, the skin and the digestive system are two peas in a pod. The skin is the digestive system outside in. The digestive system is the skin inside out. And when people ask me questions about their skin, I always tell them, send me two or three pictures, and I will tell you about your skin. I'll look at those two or three pictures, and I will tell you exactly what's going on with your skin via your digestive system. And it looks like I'm a wizard or some kind of psychic, but I'm not. I'm just speaking the language of the body. When you have pimples on a certain part of your face, that means one thing. When you have pimples on another part, it means another thing. When the skin isn't forming correctly, so you have an eczema condition, that means another thing. When you have skin forming too much, so you have psoriatic plaques, that means another thing. When you have darkness on your skin or pigmentation, that means another thing. When you have wrinkles or thinning of the skin, that means another thing. And when you understand the relationship between what's happening in the inside of the body and the outside of the body, you can look at the wrinkles, you can look at where the pimples are appearing.
And know where to go.
And know exactly.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Okay, folks, hold on to your hat. We're going to ask pharmacist Ben Fuchs if Senator Susan Collins and Dianne Feinstein can fix what's wrong with skincare products that we slather on our face to the tune of $1 billion a year. Ben?
Let me ask you something. When was the last time government got in the way and made something better? How's that for an answer?
Has it
ever happened? You think the government is going to start to regulate things and we're going to be better off because there's more regulations? Now, there's a lot of problems in the world. There's a lot of problems with drugs. There's a lot of problems with food. There's a lot of problems with the air we're breathing and the water we're drinking. As far as problems go and the poison we interact with, skincare is a drop in the bucket. Is it a good idea to slather a bunch of stuff on? No, it's a very dumb idea to slather a bunch of stuff on. Is it a good idea not to read an ingredient deck and not understand what you're putting on your skin and to do it twice a day? No, it's a very bad idea. Is it a good idea to put preservatives like parabens and formaldehyde formers on your skin every day, twice a day, three times a day, or in your hair or in your body when you take a shower? No, it's a very dumb idea. It's a very bad idea. Do we need government regulation for that? No, because what's going to happen is the government is going to use the cosmetic companies to tell them what chemicals they should use and what they shouldn't use. It's going to be the cosmetic companies themselves, the big ones, by the way, not the little ones, but the big ones, the L'Oreal's of the world and the Avon's of the world. They're going to tell the government what they should be regulating. The foxes will be running the hen house,
yeah.
And the consumer will lose, except the tax dollars will be spent and the consumer will be spending more and more money for it. So no, I don't support it at all. But what I do support is people take their own health authority in their own hands, whether it comes to food, supplements, or skincare. Read your ingredient decks, number one. Don't slather something on your body or on your skin. If you want to have beautiful skin, look for a product that has a very high concentration of active materials and no baloney materials and no toxic chemicals, and use very small amounts of it. And a good anti-aging product or a beauty product or a moisturizing product will also be a healing product if it's formulated correctly, because the same biochemistry and biochemical mechanisms that are involved in healing the skin are involved in beautifying the skin. And if I can just say this, since we're being controversial and and hopefully not too self-righteous, but maybe a little, be very cautious of sunscreens. In fact, I would be avoiding them and use sunblocks, zinc oxide in particular, not sunscreens, which are toxic, nasty chemicals.
There you go. Well, how do we get in touch with pharmacist Ben Fuchs?
Well, you go to my website, truthtreatments.com or pharmacistben.com. Also, if you just Google Pharmacist Ben, you get a bunch of stuff. And then my radio program, which is on KOMY, actually, is The Bright Side, where we talk about the good news about how wonderful the human body is and how amazing our healing and regenerating capacities are and how we can leverage them and access them. That's why I call the program The Bright Side. And if you go to pharmacistben.com or brightsideben.com, you can get a bunch of archived information. And I got zillions of YouTubes out there. And you can always send me an email, Ben, BenKSCO.com.
What's the single most important thing we can do to make our skin look better?
Eat correctly, control, understand and leverage the power of food and nutritional supplementation. And then topically, use vitamin C and retinol and alpha hydroxy acids carefully. Vitamin C, fat soluble vitamin C, and retinol and alpha hydroxy acids.
And there you go, folks. That's pharmacist Ben Fuchs. And you and your skin, you are what you eat.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.